Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Women Tech Charge is sponsored by Huawei. 20 years connecting the UK.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Amri Imafidon, your host of the Women Tech Charge podcast. Today, I'm welcoming Noemi El Haddad.
Being in tech by itself doesn't mean anything. You're always applying your tech to something.
Who is Associate Professor at Columbia University and works at the intersection of machine learning, natural language processing, and medicine. She's created the Fendo app for endometriosis.
As a patient, I was frustrated, I was angry. I mostly felt like every paper that I was reading in the medical literature was so unrelated to me as a patient.
Welcome, Noemi.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us. You're in New York, I'm in London, but by the magic of all things technology, this is just me and you here in this virtual recording booth.
Yeah, and hopefully it's gonna work out and there's not gonna be any internet issues.
So, an intro to you. You are Noemi El Haddad. You're based at Columbia University, and by training, you're a classical computer scientist.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's the kind of the first box. If we were going to say there's a box, there's a label, that's the first label is computer scientist. You did quite a kind of, you did the textbook approach, if we can say. You did your bachelor's in CS, and then you did your PhD in CS. The medicine meets computer science was something that you took on very, very early in your career then, I guess.
It was, and again, it was kind of a random, like it sounds, not to say that my life is random, but
I mean, random lives are the best ones. It's fine. We're not judging.
You know, when I started my PhD, my advisor was like, you know, I have two projects, one on news and one on medicine. I was like, I love medicine. I want to do, you know, this is the one I'm picking. And so, yeah, it was like early 2000s, late 90s. And at the time, it was very, very, I couldn't say that it was common to do medicine and computer science the way we were going at it.
I wanted to talk about this computer science in Columbia, because if we look across your career, so you've now been at Columbia for 13 years.
Yeah, I've been at Columbia 14 years nearly, and as a faculty and add six more as a PhD student, so it's been a while.
What's so special about Columbia? Let's do your sales pitch.
It was just a perfect place for me to study, but also to be a researcher. There's this strong understanding of what it means to be cross-disciplinary. Being in tech by itself doesn't mean anything. You're always applying your tech to something. And so you need that cross-disciplinary aspect to your work.
I think that's something that's so important. And it's great that you've got the support and that you've been rewarded for having that interdisciplinary approach. But I think this is the kind of beauty and the crux of why we've got this podcast is that, like you said, tech on its own means nothing. So really, it's about how do you apply these principles? It's a tool, ultimately. How do you use this tool to do particular things? And it's not just in the pursuit of computer science, but it's how do we apply it? So that's fantastic. And I think it's definitely something for anyone that's listening who maybe has another discipline or, you know, has a particular thing they're interested in. How are you able to kind of incorporate different disciplines in whatever your hobby might be, whatever your passion might be, whatever your discipline might be, to kind of add up and create better things? So that's brilliant. So you've been there for 14 years now. You've got tenure. How does that lead into the Fendo app that you've got?
The long story is, all the while I was doing my undergrad and my graduate studies and being a professor, I also had endometriosis. So I was also being a chronic patient. You know, endometriosis is just in 10 words is a women's health condition. It's defined as you have cells that look like endometrial cells, which is what's inside the uterus, that grow outside of your uterus and form lesions that are pretty painful and can also disrupt your functioning as a human being.
What's the kind of the base for endometriosis? So what's the proportion of women, shall we say, who suffer from this condition?
We don't even know, actually, exactly, because it's such an quote-unquote enigmatic condition. And by enigmatic, I mean understudied, really. But so right now, it's estimated to be 6 to 10% of women in reproductive age, which is pretty high. You know, it's not a rare disease in any way. At the end of the day, it was like, what can I do as a computer scientist who's interested in medicine? And so I had endometriosis for a while, and there's hardly any research in endometriosis, not for lack of interest, but for lack of funding. And that's throughout the world.
I think this is frustrating. So sorry to kind of, yeah, but I think it's one of those things that frustrates me quite a lot when we talk about technology and we talk about solving problems, the kind of the nature of the problems that we've solved so far. And I think this is something as well that you get in medicine, right? There's lots of different conditions that people have and have had for ages that for funding or for interest or for patriarchy or for, you know, whatever it might be, that we've not done the research, we've not got the tools, we've not made the progress in those areas, and we haven't shone enough of a light within those conditions as we probably could have if we spent less time, for example, making Viagra, or kind of, there's all these things where it's like, actually, there's a broader set of parts of the human condition that we probably should be working on and thinking about.
Exactly. As a patient, I was frustrated, I was angry, I felt like I was alone, and I mostly felt like every paper that I was reading in the medical literature was so unrelated to me as a patient and to my lived experience as a human being, that I felt like we needed to start documenting what it was to be a patient in a different way, and that maybe it would add knowledge to the scientific understanding of the disease. And I felt like, you know, asking patients directly for their lived experiences, but trying to structure it in a way that the resulting data would be useful in aggregate and would kind of help us understand better what it was to have endometriosis, was going to be novel and going to maybe help the field.
And that's where the computer science comes in. So I think this is the crux of what you're doing with Fendo, is kind of being able to take those things en masse, being able to take in all those experiences, being able to process that data and use, you know, NLP, like, natural language processing, and use machine learning, you're able to kind of open things up. So for anyone that's listening that's not heard of natural language processing, I remember having to study this as an undergrad. And I remember one of my fellows, or one of my tutors in my college, was the person in charge of this at Oxford. And I think the example I always give, I always remember being kind of fascinated at trying to break down language for a computer or for an algorithm or for some sort of machine to understand kind of parts of speech, how they come together, having idioms and all the rest of it on top. How would you describe natural language processing as a field, I guess, to someone that maybe hasn't encountered it before?
Yeah, I think it's becoming easier and easier to define it. You know, when I was starting in the field as a graduate student, I used to talk about it as we're trying to build algorithms that are going to help us understand or generate language automatically, and be as fluent as possible the way a human would be. I think now, you know, and it sounded very abstract to people. Now it's like, you know,
Siri.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's so many examples in your life, in your daily lives that are using natural language processing. It's like, you know, so now, you know, what's interesting also obviously is that there's been this giant revolution of statistical approaches and machine learning approaches to natural language processing. Which had kind of started in the 90s, really, but obviously have become so predominant right now. And it's a really exciting time because basically right now we're using a lot of statistics and machine learning, but at the same time rediscovering or finding new ways of injecting linguistic theories into these different approaches, computational approaches to NLP, and really building things that I honestly never thought I would see in my life as in terms of accuracy and performance
Give me an example, because I want to kind of compare and contrast for anyone that's new to this or is listening to this all and kind of hearing it for the first time. I always like to talk about ye olde Siri. That is, if I said, give me directions to Fifth Ave, it would say, you know, did you ask for ice cream? And I'd be like, there's nothing like what I just said. So we've gone from that in a couple of decades. We've gone from ye olde Siri, which a lot of us will remember was rubbish, to what is the kind of thing that you're processing, or what is it now able to do? And for something like Fender, or for something like the medical use case or the medical reason why you're working within this, why is that something that you want to do?
So there's a bunch of projects we're doing on endometriosis. At Columbia University, my department, which is biomedical informatics, is part of the medical school. We have access to basically all the patient records of patients who went to the hospital associated with our university. And that also presents a tremendous opportunity to understand the disease in a way that hasn't been done before. So what we're doing is we're using NLP on these notes written by doctors. I mean, they're entered, they're typed on the computer by doctors or dictated sometimes. And we're trying to extract, for example, what are the different symptoms that are being actually documented by clinicians, and how does that compare to what the patients are telling us on Fendo? Right now, Fendo, in fact, we decided not to use too many cutting edge AI or machine learning approaches to it. It was really about this very simple idea of, you're a patient, you have an experience of disease, just tell me about it. And that's it. And, you know, as simple as this. One little, just because I couldn't resist as an NLP researcher, one little functionality in this is like a diary functionality where people can just write whatever they want. And I was like, who's going to write about their disease? But turns out a lot of Fender users are writing. And it's, you know, there's a lot in there. So we're using NLP to you know, parse this diary information.
Ah, okay. So you're doing that kind of compare and contrast as well between what the medical professionals are saying and what the sufferers, what the patients are saying.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a fun one to be able to try and look at, because again, kind of, I know as a computer scientist, this is something that I ended up studying as well, and I wrote my thesis on was this kind of ethnographic ways of collecting requirements and collecting information, knowing that what the professional might write down is different from what the patient might be suffering. And actually the full picture is still quite wider than being able to add those two things together. So it's brilliant to be able to see computer science being able to kind of give us that fuller picture in a way that kind of historically we will never have been able to have that with paper records. But also, I'm guessing you're able to maybe do this across geographies and kind of build a much wider data set and a much wider picture across lots of different people.
No, you're totally right. I think the what's so exciting with the way, you know, with this approach is you can, first of all, you can apply it to many questions, right? Like it's a methodology, it's a way of thinking about advancing medicine. And it's, I think that's the biggest, for me, that's the biggest deal is that as much as clinical trials are the gold standard for understanding how disease work and how interventions and treatments work, we don't have enough funds, we don't have enough time to do a clinical trial for every type of patient out there. And we're starting to see as a community that clinical trials, because they're so regulated and because they're so careful, are in their eligibility criteria are so restrictive sometimes that they're actually removing diversity of patients. And you know, for someone like who does machine learning, it's like we're thriving on diversity and lots of data that's messy and noisy. That's what we want rather than the very small, highly curated type of data. And so it's a complementary way of doing it, but I think that's, for me, that's one of the most exciting aspects of all of this data is the diversity.
That's definitely exciting. I think the scale, like you're saying, the scale that you'll be able to do. So I think it's quite exciting to think how we might be able to take these disparate data sets en masse to build up a better picture of whatever the condition might be to then, you know, help with treatment, but also with diagnosis. So I think that's super exciting. It's a very cool thing to be working on. You're taking charge, Noemi, which is why we have you here.
Yes, exactly. Brilliant.
Thank you very much for that.
GECH, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Women Tech Charge is sponsored by Huawei. 20 years connecting the UK.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm sure for anyone listening, kind of there's lots of conditions that we end up having. So I've got something called hidradenitis suppurativa, and a lot of the frustration that you're saying, I think it's definitely something for fellow HS sufferers, people like myself, where this is something that a lot of medical professionals don't actually know a lot about, and it can be quite frustrating actually, where there's so much. I'd love to be able to speak into your app and just be like, you know, today this is what happened and yesterday that's what happened and here's how I'm feeling, and have that kind of bubbled up to help me even have this kind of self-quantified situation with it as well, which I've been trying for ages actually, to be like, how do I document what's happening? There's so many different factors, so many different symptoms, so many different episodes. What's even me as a computer scientist, I'm like, how do I corral this data for me personally? So I can know that, you know, every time I eat white potatoes, that spells disaster, right? And so it's, you know, and so it's the kind of thing that I can imagine there's lots of different scenarios where that would definitely be something that would be useful for many people.
That's right. That's totally right.
So maybe someone listening, this is definitely something you can think about.
The big difference, I think, with this population of patients who have a disease and are frustrated is that they're in it for something. They're waiting for something back. And so, you know, that's kind of what we're really leveraging here, is that we want to be partners together in understanding what this disease is. And obviously, as a patient myself, I kind of had like a not instant, but I had a lot of trust from other fellow patients. And, you know, that was part of me disclosing. At first, I was like, I shouldn't disclose that I have a diagnosis because I'm a researcher. I'm, you know, detached. Yes. And turns out, no, you shouldn't be detached. You should care tremendously about what you're doing. And, you know, you can find a way to be impartial in your analyses and rigorous in your analyses, but be very much attached and very much in touch with your subjects and showing empathy and trying to make them be partners with you. I think, and you know, it was, you know, in retrospect, that was the right choice, was to really open myself up and say, look, it's going to be difficult. Like, I don't really enjoy talking about my uterus in, you know, to people, but I'm going to do it. And I'm going to talk about my period and my pain and all the ways in which it has affected me, because I think I want others to understand that, one, it's okay. Two, it's actually liberating. And three, if you do the same, we can together maybe change the state of affairs when it comes to understanding the disease.
Because some might see it as being biased if you've got the condition and you're working in the trials and working in the field alongside it. But I think the other thing that it helps you do is to have more equitable practice and allow people, like you're saying, to have more power and more agency in shaping solutions. So it's you building empathy, but it's also you building something that's not just for them and it's us versus them, but it's very much more collaborative, very much more participatory. And it's the kind of solution that then will definitely last longer and be more deep set, because it's been made with not just those people in mind, but with the voices of those people as well. So the second part of my big question, which I still want us to delve a little bit into, is the kind of the unpaid labor side of this. So, and this is something we know kind of women in particular, when we look across society, we look at all that goes on in the home, kind of it's unpaid labor is a big part of the female experience, shall we say. And it's something that I know kind of was almost intentional, but not necessarily in a terrible way or in a purposely minimizing way. But it was, I think initially when we decided to kind of measure GDP, for example, we said, you know, the amount of labor and the amount of work that women do in the home is so complex, so multi-layered, it's there, but it's really hard for us to add that into our measure. And so we're now not going to measure economic productivity based on
that. Yeah, we're just going to ignore it.
For simplicity, which as mathematicians, as computer scientists, often there are things where you're like, do you know what, that factor I'm going to ignore for now while I build the system and I'll add an extra complexity and extra. We just didn't get there, right? So from where you're sat, what have you seen in terms of this unpaid labor that women have been doing on this front, in, you know, across medtech, shall we say?
Right. So I think right now the field of femtech is very much exploding, and it's becoming difficult to understand who's in it for advancing women's health and who's in it for just advancing, you know, getting a better valuation for their startups. It's the ethical boundaries are becoming harder to navigate. And so I don't have a good answer for you other than, you know, there's this realization in our society that there's a lot of money to be made out of women's health under the, you know, whether it is like, here's an app that can put you in touch with someone who can help you freeze your eggs for a better price to, you know, is it feminist? I don't know. I have no idea. I don't have a good answer for it. And it's not up to me really to answer it. But all I'm saying is that these type of apps are appearing on the market to, you know, tell us everything about yourself. And in exchange, we'll give you some self-care advice. But really that, you know, all this data is being sold to Facebook for better advertising. So, you know, it's becoming complex. I think what's different now is, you know, this type of like taking advantage of a user was always there in our ecosystem. I think what's slightly different and harder to navigate is now, you know, the feminist seal or just saying like we're helping women's health when in fact it's not obvious at all that you're helping women's health. So that's getting harder and harder to navigate for sure. I mean, there was, you know, the just even menstrual trackers, right? Like there was in the past few years, there's been several news stories about how different apps were selling menstruation data to Facebook. And it's why, you know, we don't really, you don't really need to do this. I mean, others and for, you know, so it's, and on top of it, you don't disclose it really well to users. So there's a whole added layer to this. I mean, the fact that we're dealing with such intimate data is what's also frustrating about it. So all this to say, it's happening more and more. I don't have a good answer about this question, but we do know that one, women are using this type of tech much more than men. And that too, this seal of helping women's health being part of femtech community is becoming more and more of a thing. It's kind of like the equivalent of like, you know, all natural ingredients. What does that mean exactly?
It's like, yeah, it's all here. I think it's definitely an important thing to consider. And I think anyone listening, it's something to wonder, how does that apply to, you know, whatever roles you already have or whatever interests you already have. But I think there's definitely something around whether it's some sort of ethical lines that we draw, or whether it's actually taking, and like you said, kind of there's not one feminist answer, right? The idea of feminism is that everyone has their voice and can say something different and it has the same weighting. But I think there is something around even just kind of distribution of wealth and who holds that money. I think that's also something that's going to be super powerful to see and to make sure that we're proactive about ensuring that that becomes a thing. So so this is the call to action, I guess. That's what anyone that, you know, to the listener that is listening, kind of how can you be a part of this? How can you be a part of a crowd maybe that feeds data into some of these things? How can you be part of someone that's fighting for the right policy or is raising awareness? I know you with Defender app, Noemi, have also been doing lots of work in terms of kind of publishing this data or publishing this information in places that more people will be able to see it. So kind of almost taking the outreach element of things. Do you want to talk a little bit about maybe your medium platform that you're building out under Defender app?
Sure. So part of this idea of, you know, like we're not just using your data, we're partnering. We've been doing a lot of, I have thankfully on my team about like many, many different volunteers and paid volunteers, depending on how much time they have, that help me kind of translate the research and the findings for the patient communities and for others who are interested in women's health. And so there are a few things we do. We do a lot of small meetups and talk to different patient communities. We also write a blog. We're about to actually put out a summary of two research papers that got published recently and kind of making a lay version of it that explains what does it mean for patients, really, which is really kind of like the first analysis of all this Fando data. And we also, surprisingly, we're pretty good at disseminating through Instagram, which, you know, it's kind of like science by Twitter, but it works. It, you know, we can have very interesting discussions with patients actually through Instagram.
There we go. That's the future. Talking to your doctor through Instagram. that's where it's going. God forbid. I'm joking. Right. So thank you so much, Noemi. I think that was fascinating on so many different fronts. I think there's so much there for people to think about and to kind of have in the back of their minds as you are going through whatever your health journey might be, whatever conditions you might have, whoever your physician is, like whatever the routines are that you've got, whether it's your tracking apps, you know, there's so much there to think about. So thank you very much, Noemi, for giving us your time and for lifting the lid a little bit on what could happen next and also where computer science meets all of these things. Where can people find you if people want to read more into this or, you know, contribute and be a part of what's going on? What's the best way for people to be in touch or to follow?
We have a website called citizenendo.org, and that's kind of like the umbrella name of our project. The Fando app is part of it. If not, the Fando app is available on all of your favorite operating systems for your smartphone.
And that's Fando PH, right?
Yes, it's Fando PH because it's a portmanteau word for phenotyping endometriosis.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Nomi. That was fascinating. Thank you for giving us all a little bit more work to do. Hopefully paid rather than unpaid long term, but there we go. Thank you very much, Nomi.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk. It was fun.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.